Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. And welcome back to another week. And it's a much more relaxing week, isn't it, Brian?
Well, yes, it is, Shane. And by the way, this is Shane Vanderhart, Brian Myers.
Yes, yes.
And this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Well, I did welcome them to the show. So anyway, yes, this is Shane Vanderhart. I do know my name.
Hey, I don't blame you for forgetting, though, because right. We have been busy.
Just, yeah, a little bit. Finally, you know, got my sanity back probably midweek. It was great. We had a good conference.
We did.
Had fun. We're going to talk a little bit more about that.
You know, Caffeinated Thoughts briefing last Saturday.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that next segment. So it was just like, it builds up, and then suddenly I wanted to like sleep all day Sunday. I don't know about you.
I was pretty tired.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
we're going to be busy on Saturday as well.
Right, right. We're going to be broadcasting live at Freedom 2015 event, the Religious Liberty National Religious Liberties Conference from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So that's good news or bad, depending on your perspective.
Well,
if it's bad news, Steve Dace will be following us, and then you'll be done
really
with
bad
us.
News.
That's really bad news, I guess, yeah.
No, tune in for our show at 8 o'clock.
Right.
And then tune in again at 11.
Great. Actually,
or just keep the radio on, whatever you want to do.
Yes.
But, yeah,
yes,
we're going to be on the radio more than once on Saturday.
Absolutely. So I'd like to, we have special guests in studio. We don't actually get in studio guests that often, so it's pretty exciting. Rebecca Lauck is the author of I'll Take My Disease Rare, Please, My Journey with Fibrosing Mediastinitis. Rebecca, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and I pronounced it right?
Yeah, pretty close.
Pretty close. That's about as good as I can get, I think.
There was an S in there that probably didn't belong.
Hey. That's okay. That's okay. We'll take it. So, what is that disease?
Well, it's actually extremely rare, and there's about 600 of us diagnosed with it in the United States. And what it is basically, it's the most severe complication, but the rarest of a fungus called histoplasmosis.
Mm-hmm.
But with my immune system, it had it's an abnormal response to this fungus to fight it off. And so my body developed an abundance of scar tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And so that scar tissue, instead of stopping, it's crushing all of my organs and veins in my chest area.
Okay.
It's very complicated. Just as hard as complicating as it is to say.
So, yeah, absolutely. So when were you diagnosed with this, and what was the process leading up to that?
Actually, it was in 2002. And I had been sick with a cold, and I had a cough that wouldn't go away. So my doctor did a chest x-ray just to make sure it wasn't pneumonia or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually found a mass on my right lung. So they automatically assumed that it was cancer. And they got me in right away, and we decided we were going to do a thoracotomy to remove that mass. And when they went in to remove it, the mass was so solid that, I mean, they couldn't do nothing with it. But they were able to get a biopsy, and that's when I was diagnosed with fibrosing mediastinitis.
And what's the prognosis for somebody diagnosed with that?
In 2002, they actually told me that I would probably not live more than 10 years. And just because in 2002, there were only 200 people that they had known with this disease, it was so rare. And it was just basically a guessing game. There wasn't much treatment that could be done. And then luckily, my symptoms weren't too bad at the time. It was just a cough. So I kind of got better. And then actually in 2007, is when symptoms really hit me hard. And that is when doctors agreed that, you know, yeah, you're dying. And they encouraged me to make arrangements for my 2-year-old daughter at the time.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we got your husband in studio. Mm-hmm. Sir, remind me your name. I'm sorry.
Tim.
Yeah. What was that like? I can't even imagine having been married, you know, being married, what kind of news that would be. What were you thinking when you heard about this?
She's always been pretty tough. We've kind of always lived like it wasn't there, mm-hmm. but I mean, it was always in the back of our minds, but we always kept pushing forward and, to find answers.
Yeah. So you were diagnosed in 2002. They said you had approximately 10 years. Obviously, mm-hmm. It is 2015.
Yeah.
So what's happened since?
Well, in 2007, when we had been to the Mayo Clinic in Iowa City, and there was one doctor who actually was at the University of Iowa Hospitals, and he wasn't supposed to be there that day. And we basically said we were going to see him, and we weren't leaving the hospital until we did, because he was one doctor who had heard of this disease. And
so that in and of itself was a big deal, just to find somebody that was aware of this disease, its existence.
Yep, very much so. And when we talked with him, he said he had someone with this disease, and he put stents. At the time, my superior vena cava, which is the main vein to, you know, from my heart
right.
to mm-hmm. my head, he said, put stents in there and I'll be good to go. Well, after 5 years of doctors telling me I was dying, you know, it was really hard to accept, but of course we went for it. And
right.
within the procedure lasted probably 4 hours, and I was home that night, and all of my symptoms had disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. And then, you know, I was good to go again until 2013. And that's kind of what prompted me to write this book. I developed a blood clot, and the scar tissue had grown and was starting to crush my lung more, which was putting strain on my heart. So I had developed hypertension as well. And so, you know, it had been around 11 years, I think, since I had been diagnosed. And, you know, I kind of lost focus on God and kind of thought, well, maybe the doctors are right and I'm going to die. It's been 11 years. And so I took all of the journals that I had been keeping over the years and I put them into a book so that my kids would have something to remember me by. So
wow.
It's a pretty complicating story.
Right. So tell us a little bit about how God's, since, you know, 2013, how God has helped you, you know, live with this disease, and what has he been teaching you?
Oh, wow. A lot. And actually, I think it was in 2007, I had taken a trip to my brother's, and I think that's when I can really look back and see where I finally realized that God had not left me, because I was on my way back, and this is after I'd heard that doctor said there was no hope for me, and there was a song that came on the radio, and I was just in the middle of crying. I had had as much as I could take. I was just thinking, you know, life's not fair. Why are you doing this to me, God? And the song came on about, you know, if the rain's too heavy, he'll get you through the storm. And then throughout the years, I still kind of went back and forth with, you know, this all is going to, it's going to be okay. And then back in 2013, when I got really sick, it just, you know, I put all these journals together and it's like, why am I worrying about tomorrow? Because reading through my story, every single thing that I thought was devastating to me had turned into an amazing blessing. And I just think, you know, I like to tell people, doctor said this disease would take my life away. But I think, you know, this disease has given me the opportunity to show how good God is and how he can get us through anything. We just have to have that faith.
So now 2 years have gone by since that terrible time in 2013. So mm-hmm. tell us about where you're at today with respect to your health.
You know, it is what it is. And it's like, I still have a lot of battles. And actually since this book, I've had mm-hmm. tremendous battles, but you know, we know that God's got this and he's got a plan for us. And he's using this to his good. So
you're listening to Caffeinate Thoughts Radio, and with us in studio, we have Rebecca Lauck. She is the author of I'll Take My Disease Rare, Please, and I will not try to attempt to pronounce the name of the disease.
This is pretty funny on the cover. She and her husband are standing in front of a barbecue grill.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so I saw that when I was looking up the book, and it's like, oh, that's cute. You're a cattle farmer?
I am a cattle farmer, which is pretty demanding sometimes.
I bet.
But it also gives me the ability to kind of make my own schedule and make it to all our appointments. There's been a lot of appointments, a lot of rocky road, but, like in 2002, since then they said she was going to die. I mean, we have four children now. A lot of good has come out of every situation.
Right.
We've turned everything to good. I mean,
yeah. So that's awesome to see, because I haven't quite experienced what you've experienced. My son had Hodgkin's lymphoma, and you know, there was no rhyme or reason to any childhood cancer. You get to experience something, I think, that you would never experience without going through that. Just the peace that God gives, the love that you experience from Him, but also from, you know, the community rallying around you. And we just, you know, we got to see it outpouring of support. I remember, talking to my son, you know, 'cause he was 13 when he was first diagnosed. It's like, are you scared? I'd be scared. What's going on? It's like, no, Dad, what do I have to worry about? I have Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that's so true.
And incredible.
I'm thinking, when I have that much faith, you know, being in my 40s, as this, you know, then 13-year-old had.
I remember you telling that story about Mo, and I thought that's really awesome.
Right. And you know, we saw God do amazing things through that, and it's encouraging to see how He's, just the fact you're sitting here today mm-hmm. is incredible.
Right. And I've actually, one doctor did say you are a walking miracle. And I believe, you know, the power of prayer, because like you said, community and support, people you don't even know are praying for you. And it's amazing. God is good. And
absolutely. So what have they learned about this disease since you've been diagnosed?
Actually, they have learned more that it is something to do with the immune system and the way it's responding to these infections. But it's still kind of a guessing game. And actually, unfortunately, just a couple of weeks ago, there were five of us that live in Iowa with this disease, and a 23-year-old just passed away from this disease. Mm. So, you know, that's one of those situations where it's like, you know, God, we can't see what you're doing right now, but he you know, I think because of him, we're going to get that much closer to a cure. And
Rebecca, you've written this book. Have you had other opportunities to share your story and other means, I guess, of getting some awareness out with regard to this particular disease?
Yeah, we're trying to. We're just starting to get some contact. So I appreciate you guys letting me come and share my story. And we're just really hoping that, yeah, it's going to get out there, and people will at least, you know, even if you can't pronounce the name, they're going to be like, well, what is that? You know?
That's just me. Everybody else could probably just spout it off with no problem. But
we call it FM for short.
FM. I'm going to go with that. Yeah, FM. Yeah. So what can people do to learn more about this? And what are some, I guess, I, there probably isn't enough research money. I mean, research money is at a premium. Unfortunately, right. It tends to be, it goes to people, you know, where there's more people suffering typically
right.
with this disease. So what are some action steps, I guess, for people?
Basically, we're just trying to, you know, with only 600 of us, we do have a support group through Facebook, but there's still just not a lot of information. So we're trying to figure out how to get one organization together so that we can start raising some money. And we know it's going to take millions of dollars, but at least, you know, get the word out, get the information out there.
Great. So where can people learn more about the book?
Actually, it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and then it was westbowpress.com.
So you got some good distribution behind the book. That's fantastic.
I was really blessed that Westbow is one of the largest Christian book publishers, and I sent it in. They were the very first one I sent it into, and they...
Boom.
Yeah, so I'm very blessed.
And then they can also read your blog at Rebecca1010.com.
Right, yep.
Excellent, excellent. We're going to be giving a copy of this book away, and we'll talk about a little bit of how you can register for that in the fourth segment, but I'm gonna run out and buy a copy because this is gonna be an encouraging story because even if you're not suffering from FM, there's probably life lessons that you can apply. And anytime God brings you through a time of illness or a time of where things seem hopeless, remember there's always hope with Jesus Christ. And just even if it's at the time you're facing the point where this is it, just remember, to live as Christ, to die as gain.
Yes.
Because fortunately, for those of us who know Jesus Christ, our mortality, the time we spend on this dirt
planet, we're just sojourners passing through.
It's just a blip of time compared to eternity, and fortunately. We can go into things like this knowing we have hope, where a lot of people don't. So,
Rebecca, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Tim, you as well.
Thank you so much.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
Oh, in unison, that was special. That warmed my heart, guys. We need to start like a barbershop quartet, except we're only three. Ooh. Maybe we got Gabe in studio. Gabe, you want to join a barbershop quartet so we could actually have a quartet? Instead of a trio?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about that one.
Okay, he's reluctant.
Maybe Brian could sing out of both sides of his mouth.
We'll get Gabe on board with this. So
this is all going nowhere fast.
Right. So anyway, just, we talked a little bit about the briefing in the first segment, but just wanted to mention, I wanted to play a couple, a few clips, three clips in particular. Tried to pull one from each candidate speech, and let's go ahead and play what Bobby Jindal, he's discussing federal control during his speech.
We have seen again and again as states that not only do they trample on our rights, they trample on the American people's rights. So specific programs, let's take, we'll take a few. The Department of Education. The Federal Department of Education spends billions of dollars on teacher quality programs that haven't been shown to improve teacher quality. Why do we do this? Why not get rid of those programs, give the dollars back to the taxpayers or the local state government? You can block grant them or just, cut the spending, cut the taxes. Title I dollars. Why not block grant those or let the dollars follow the child so the parents get to decide how those dollars are spent? The only thing, why is the Federal Department of Education involved in student expulsion policies? Why are they involved in curriculum at all? Why in the world is the federal government telling you what your children should eat for their school lunches? And by the way, this is a pet peeve. This is an important issue, but it's even more, not only as a presidential candidate, as a father. I got three young kids in public school. All three of them used to buy their school lunches. Last year was only one. And with Sean, I had to pack a lunch and he'd buy a lunch. I said, Sean, why are we doing both? And he said, well, Daddy, I'm hungry. Otherwise, I don't get enough food to eat at school. My wife, we live 15 minutes away from the school. She goes to pick them up. She had to bring snacks every day. You know, it's a heck of a thing when you got to bring groceries to pick up your own kids from school because they're so hungry they can't make it 15 minutes home. They were starving when they got in the car. In the old days, I could go to the lunch lady or the teacher or the principal, but now they just shrug their shoulders and say, those are the federal rules. We get federal dollars, so we can't decide what to feed. Now none of my kids eat the school lunch. I know that's not the biggest thing, but it is irritating as a parent when, and you've got teachers saying, well, we can't control what we teach in our classrooms because of Common Core. I've got, and I can tell you another story about math and Common Core.
Yeah, and you know, he went on. I thought that was pretty interesting story.
He was pretty annoyed. You could tell it's kind of like, this is a minimal thing, but it really annoyed me.
But it impacts me as a dad. And that's one of the things, you know, with this education. And he realizes he's been seeing an impact of some of these things as a dad. I remember him talking to me individually about the math that his kids are having experience under Common Core and how it basically ludicrous it is, and how his kids, who are actually pretty good at math, hate it now. Because of what they're having to go through.
I think he mentioned that in our first radio interview with him, too.
Probably,
if I remember correctly.
Right.
Just, it was an eye-opener for him trying to work through these math problems with his kids.
Yeah. And you know, he one time, I mean, you know, he allowed Common Core to come into Louisiana. He signed it. He was governor when it came in. But he recognized his mistake, and it wasn't, a lot of people, skeptics will say, oh, this is just a political thing, because he's going to run for president. You know, I can understand why someone would say that, but having talked to the man, and I realized, no, this was, he first of all started listening to his constituents, because he does that. He's very, very responsive to his constituents.
Right.
But also, too, I could see it was impacting him. Yeah, personally,
exactly.
As well.
I think his experience was a lot like a lot of parents.
Right.
They really hadn't thought about the issue, hadn't really given it much attention,
right,
until all of a sudden they're sitting at the kitchen table with their child trying to hash out these math problems. That was an eye-opener for a lot of
people. I mean, at the time he thought Common Core was state-led because, you know, it was a group of the National Governors Association, all that. Obviously, it was a top-down initiative. He recognizes that now. He's never been in favor of No Child Left Behind, so you know.
It's pretty clear.
Anyway, he says, I was wrong, you know, and I'm fighting this thing, and he's been fighting it. So
yeah, and it's been pretty clear on almost every issue. He is not in favor of top down initiatives.
Right. Right. That's
not who he is on any subject.
Even you know, he wants to do Title I portability or something like that. Some people are nervous about that. Heritage Foundation actually likes the idea. The thing is, as long as it's block granted to the states and they can decide exactly what that would look like, that's fine. I don't want necessarily the feds, even with school choice, dictating that. I just want just send the money back to states, you know. But he's absolutely right. And no, I think one thing we could definitely see under a President Jindal would be he would eliminate the lunch mandate. Holy cow. That's gone. Gone.
Bye-bye, Michelle.
Right. Clip two, we have Mike Huckabee. And he brought up a story here that I had not heard before.
Jen and I had been married for a year when she was diagnosed with cancer of the spine. That's a scary thing when you're 20 years old and the newlywed. And I was in grad school. I'm going to tell you something. It was the scariest time of our lives because we were first told she probably would not survive the cancer. And then told that they would attempt to remove the tumor, which was in the canal of her spine. But if they were able to remove it, there was more than likely the probability that they would have to sever her spinal cord in order to get the tumor out, and that would leave her paralyzed from the waist down. That was the best they gave us. in terms of our hopes and what they thought the prognosis would be. By the grace of God and a lot of prayers from a lot of people, she survived the surgery. And after the surgery, pretty much had to learn to walk again. 6 weeks of radiation. And in those days, this was 1975, they pretty much said, well, you're kind of microwaving your insides. You'll never have children. So we didn't expect that we ever would get to have children. But, you know, at that point, she was alive. And that seemed like a pretty good gift from God. And a few months later, I came home one day from class. We were barely eking out a living, the two of us. And she said, guess what? I've been to the doctor. I said, is everything okay? She says, well, I don't know. It depends on how you look at it. Well, that's scary when you've just gone through a year of cancer. And she says, I'm pregnant. And I was shocked because that wasn't supposed to be a possibility. And today we have 3 children and 5 grandchildren, none of whom we were supposed to be able to have.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a powerful story. I know
it's a great story.
That really encouraged my wife because, as our listeners may or may not know, my son had cancer, Hodgkin's lymphoma. And, you know, there's a possibility because of the chemo that he went through that he may not be able to have kids. So she was very, you know, that was just an encouraging thing for her. And she got to share that with Governor Huckabee. And Governor Huckabee also, he made some comments about, I wanted to pull that if we, I didn't think we'd have time, but I wanted to pull that clip as well about Western land development, which made me think he was channeling one of our other guests, Ken Ivory, from American Lands Council. But it's like, they were like synced. It was,
they were,
it was pretty cool. That basically saying, hey, you want to pay off this debt? We got some assets out west we can sell off. And Ken's been saying that same thing. So that was kind of neat.
That was
to see.
Fantastic.
And I'd like to see more presidential candidates pick that up.
And I'm pretty confident that they didn't cook that up ahead of time. That just happened to be where both guys were at relative to that issue.
Right. Definitely. Let's play Rick Santorum. He was asked a question before he played. I want to give a little context. He finished talking about the Islamic Jihad with ISIS and Iran. Then he was asked about the cultural jihad.
How much time we got here, Ron? Okay.
Oh, we got plenty of time. Yep.
One of my favorite stories is a story about a guy named G.K. Chesterton. Chesterton was a great writer and social critic of the last century, early last century, in London. And he was asked by a London tabloid, a very liberal publication, to write an article. And the article was he was to write about this article entitled, What's Wrong with the World? They thought they would make fun of him because he would then write all of these things blasting the new age that was upon us. And Chesterton said, okay, I'll do it. And so he took the assignment. The next day he submitted this paper, and here's what it said. What's wrong with the world? I am. Respectfully submitted, G.K. Chesterton. Ladies and gentlemen, why are they able to do that in the schools here? Because you let them. Because you let them. How did they take the Bibles out of the school? Because you let them. How is it that they can do all the things that you object to? Because you let them. You see, when the left loses, they don't stop fighting. Do you realize that 10 of the 14 candidates for president on the Republican side have said the following with respect to same-sex marriage and the marriage decision? It is the law of the land. It's time to move on. It's the law of the land. It's time to move on. We lose because we don't fight. And when we lose, we wonder, how do we lose? Because the other side doesn't give up. They lose, and the next day they come back and they file another lawsuit and they fight again. They pound away.
Price stopper right there. They keep money quote. We lose because we do not fight.
I'm so glad you put this clip in because I thought it was the most powerful part of Santorum's discussion of things at the briefing. It was absolutely spot on.
And you know, he later on said, you know, why am I even answering this? Because it's up to us as a society. The president can't do this. And I had a chance to wrap it up, reminding us all that we needed to be salt and light. And when we neglect our role as salt and light, these types of things happen. We can't disengage from society. And when we lose a battle, we have to remember we haven't lost the war. Quickly, just also want to bring up, we have made an endorsement. Brian and I. Yep. Drum roll, please. Thank you very much. Bobby Jindal. We were very happy. Brian and I had like a mind meld. You know, we were on the same mind.
Don't say that.
Oh, no. No.
He's alive! My creature is alive!
No, seriously, I mean, it didn't take us very long to realize that we both were on the same page with Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal. He's been a good friend of the show. He's been very accessible, but that's not, you know, no, obviously, ability to interview was part of the criteria. But we've endorsed him because mainly his experience and his resume is so impressive by any standard.
And we both just flat liked him,
right,
all the way along,
right. And we're so aligned on so many issues, and he's one thing I appreciate is he's been putting out before he even got into the race officially. He was putting out policy papers, and he's an ideas guy, and he will give detailed responses on how he'll govern, and then he's got a record to show how he's governed. So. I have a proclivity towards governors. I obviously didn't go that route in 2012.
But these guys have that administrative experience,
right?
They really.
I know how he'll govern, but he's one of us. He's a fighter, and he's a DC. He's not DC establishment. He's an outsider,
and he's a very down to earth guy,
right? And hey, Willie Robertson endorsed him.
Stop.
So, you know, how could you not support a guy that Willie Robertson endorsed?
Hey, I got to make a point here. After a full day of political discussion at the briefing, pretty exhausting day of political discussion, Shane Vanderhart closed out our event with that which was spiritual. It was really good. The gospel was communicated, and as he mentioned, he gave us an exhortation to be salt and light. And he said, how do we change the nation one person at a time? Shane, that was an awesome way to close out
the briefing. Only by the grace of God, only through the gospel can we accomplish this, not through politics. Seems counterintuitive compared to what we normally talk about, but that's true. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give them a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
Okay, we're going into our news rundown, news you can use. And we're starting off today with Hillary and her email.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
We could probably open with this every week.
Drip, drip, drip. Ooh. The Right Scoop, this is from therightscoop.com. Fox News's Monica Crowley revealed that several anonymous sources indicated to her that the FBI has found confidential top secret, which is a special classification, top secret information on Hillary's private email account, and that this is enough to press charges against her for obstruction. Crowley says that her sources say that the FBI director is very serious and might really charge Hillary. I'm still struggling to believe this is possible.
I've read some behind the scenes account where Hillary and Obama, there's no love lost there.
Zero.
So he's out. He's term limited. I don't think he really cares.
Well, I don't know, buddy. I think if he thought that he was actually going to sink the Democratic nominee,
well, see, Bernie Sanders would get in then.
If we thought it was ever possible
to put somebody even further left than Barack Obama, that might be Bernie Sanders.
I don't think so. But you're right. You heard that whole exchange that took place between Obama and Clinton a while back, where she said, you know, call off your dogs, Barack.
Right, right.
You know,
and he's like, you got yourself into this mess.
You dug this hole, lady.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. I don't necessarily think he's going to provide her any political cover, but we'll see. We'll see.
All right. Next up, we have, you've heard of the Tale of Two Cities. We have the Tale of Two Biffies here. The Tale of Two Bathrooms. The first one is from LifeSiteNews.com. Their hero turned out to be a zero.
Did they write that or did you?
No, that's right out of
LifeSite.
It's a quote from LifeSite.
Good.
Voters in Houston, the nation's fourth largest city, voted in a landslide last night to repeal an ordinance that gave people who identify as transgender the right to use the restrooms, showers, and changing facilities of the opposite biological sex. More than 60% of voters rejected the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance.
Or HERO,
the acronym, which city council passed last May. The controversial measure punished businesses. Did I say punished?
Mm-hmm.
Punished businesses that refused to allow biological males to use women's facilities with a $5,000 fine per infraction.
On top of this, but contrast that with a federal judge ruling against a Chicago area school district saying, you know what, the curtain that you're making the transgender boy use in the women's restroom, that's just inappropriate and wrong. So,
well, speaking of which, that's
the opposite extreme, where you have a judge telling a school district that girls, high school girls, are now, this boy has a constitutional right, apparently, to expose himself to high school girls.
Well, speaking of which, this is from Christianity Today. A Chicago school district has refused to allow a transgender male who identifies himself as a female to use a girl's locker room, despite advice from the U.S. Department of Education. Don't you just love those people at the DOE?
They're my favorite.
The transgender student of Township High School District 211 sought to use the locker room nearly 2 years ago, reported the Christian News Network. However, the district did not approve it based on privacy concerns of other students. Right. You think?
Duh.
Shazam!
Duh. It's like, it's not just about you.
It offered the student a private location to change.
With the curtain, that's what.
But he refused it.
Right.
He contacted the ACLU, which filed a complaint with the Office of Civil Rights of the U.S. Department of Education. The Education Department said that the district had to allow the student to use the locker room of his choice based on Title IX requirements. However, the district still refused to do so. So, listen, kudos to the citizens of Houston, and kudos to this particular school district in Chicago.
And, yeah.
Yep. For having common sense.
Boo Indeed. To the Department of Education Indeed. And to the federal
That's
judge
right.
telling them they have to
That's
do that.
That's exactly. Once again, we see morons running the country at the federal level.
Moron? And we need moron.
Yes. Moron?
Yeah. Okay. That's just wrong.
Boneheads.
Okay. According to NBC News, Carson and Trump are well ahead in the polls. Ben Carson has surged into the lead of the Republican presidential race, getting support from 29% of GOP primary voters, according to a brand new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll. That is the highest percentage of any GOP candidate so far in the survey. Carson's 29% is followed by Trump at 23%, Marco Rubio at 11%, Ted Cruz at 10%, and Jeb Bush at 8%. These findings are similar to the New York Times CBS poll released last week, which also showed Carson in first place in the national GOP contest.
Of course, Carson seems to be giving the press fodder.
Oh, boy. Did he step in it again or
well,
what?
Well, the pyramids, you know, the whole pyramid. Frankly, I don't have an opinion on it other than don't get off your talking points.
Yeah.
That's just, and to any candidate, just when you get off your talking points and you allow the media to establish
this one was pointless.
Right.
Why go there?
Why are we even having discussion about what the pyramids were used for?
The pyramids.
Frankly, I don't care.
Dr. Carson, tell us about the pyramids.
Obviously, yeah. Historically inaccurate, but anyway. Does it qualify him to be president one way or the other? Absolutely not. But, yeah, just bad news.
Shane, real quick, what do you think about the fact that we had assumed once again that the Donald was going to take a hit after the last debate, and instead he's at least maintained his strength, and in some cases he's actually shown some surge?
I think that says it all,
Shane,
doesn't it?
Shane is speechless once again.
There you go.
What I'd like to say, I probably shouldn't. So let's moving on.
Yeah. All right, we had Matt Bevin's big win. According to the Washington Post, Republican Matt Bevin has defeated Democrat Jack Conway to become only the second Republican governor in the state in 4 decades.
Wow, I didn't know that stat.
And that would be Kentucky, yes?
Yeah, I thought Kentucky was, I guess they're about as schizophrenic as Iowa is.
Yeah. Republicans have dominated federal elections in Kentucky, but moderate Democrats have maintained control of state government.
They're not quite to as far left as you see with some folks.
Bevin's election gives Republicans control of the executive branch along with a commanding majority in the state Senate. Democrats still have an 8-seat majority in the state House. You know, one of the things that happened here is there was some voter backlash for what happened to Kim Davis.
Kim Davis.
Yeah.
Two issues.
It really was.
Yeah. Kim Davis, religious liberty, the whole Planned Parenthood thing. Also, basically, Bevin was talking about all these things. He's also staunchly anti-Common Core, and Kentucky was the first state to adopt Common Core. So I find it very interesting that the state elected an anti-Common Core governor.
Now, I haven't seen any numbers, Shane. Maybe you have, but it was my understanding that this was a big win. It wasn't a squeaker.
No,
it wasn't
no,
one he, or two
he,
percentage
no,
points.
He won by like 6%. I think it was the final.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tens of thousands of vote margin.
Pretty
not close. It
pretty
was
convincing.
A convincing win. And I don't know if it had been closer had this third party candidate, or this independent candidate, not been in. I don't know who he drew voters from. The thing, nope. Is how Bevin was trailing in the polls the entire time, and he still pulled out the win, which tells us a couple things. One, maybe our polling
that
isn't accurate
is exactly
anymore.
Exactly right.
Which, you know,
you see that sort of thing happen quite a bit anymore.
Yeah, it seems to be the case. So anyway, very interesting news week. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
That middle-of-the-night phone call is taking its toll on you. You thought that the days of your kids interrupting your sleep were long gone. But now it's the predicaments of your grown children that are keeping you awake. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Parenting adult children can be draining. You have invested 2 intense decades into that kid, and you don't want to see it all go for naught. Well, consider these thoughts. As a parent, you're responsible for the process, not the product. Each person makes their own decision regarding Christ. God has no grandchildren, only children. Also, loosen that emotional tether. Let out the slack that ties their decisions to you, and you avoid the whiplash effect. Realistically, very little of what they do is actually because of you. If you need help working with an adult child, call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465 or visit us online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
And hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Going to wrap up here, last segment. Want to talk to you about a new thing we have going on. Because
we have a new thing.
A new thing. We're always doing a new thing.
No, we're not. That's
no,
why,
you're right.
That's why this is special.
We're conservatives. We don't do new things. Keep them all old things.
Routine.
Yeah. No, yes. Seriously, we love you guys. We exist only because of you, the listeners, and our readers on the website. But we want to have a chance to bless you every month. This month, we're going to be doing a monthly giveaway. This month, we're giving away a copy of you heard her earlier in the first segment, Rebecca Lauk's new book, I'll Take My Disease Rare, Please. And if you go to caffeinatedthoughts.com and you look for the little icon off the sidebar that says As Heard on the Radio, click that and you'll see a registration form. And basically, the only criteria is one that you listen to the show, because I'll tell you why in a second. You have to be able to listen to the show or else you're not going to be able to do this. Two, you're a U.S. resident, because I'm sorry, I don't want to ship to Bora Bora. And three,
Or Zimbabwe.
Three, you have to have not won in 90 days. But the good news is nobody's won in 90 days, so you're all eligible. So unless you live in Bora Bora, and I'm sorry, you're just not
eligible.
Okay, that's enough of all this. Yeah.
And I'll say too that there might be some prizes that are Iowa centric. So if you're listening to the podcast out of state, you may or may not be interested in this. But anyway, when you go to that link, you need to enter our winning word, which our winning word is
truth.
Remember
truth.
Okay,
not Ruth.
Truth.
Truth with a T. This is a great book. I can tell already. I've had a chance to take a look here at the back cover and thumb through it. It looks like a fantastic read. All right. And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
Okay, this is from Fox News. An Ohio first grader was given a 3-day suspension last week after he pretended to shoot a fellow student with a bow and arrow. Matthew and Martha Meal told WCPO that their 6-year-old son was imitating a Power Ranger during recess at Our Lady of Lourdes in Cincinnati on Thursday. It's a private school.
Mm-hmm.
The first grader was playing outside when a teacher noticed the act and told the principal, who then called the boy into his office, according to Meal. Martha Meal said principal, speaking of hard words to pronounce or easy to butcher, Cracchioli? I didn't say that right.
Oh, that's all right. That's in keeping with us.
Yes.
The
principal called her Thursday at work to deliver the news. I really didn't understand, she said. I had him on the phone for a good amount of time so he could really explain to me what he was trying to tell me. My question to him was, is this really necessary? Does this really need to be a 3-day suspension under the circumstances that he's playing and he's 6 years old?
I have no tolerance for any real, pretend, or imitated violence.
A letter from the principal to the boy's parents said, the punishment is an out-of-school suspension. Well, his mother, Martha Meal, said, I can't stop him from pretending to be a superhero. I can't stop him from playing Ninja Turtles.
I love how your voice changes.
I can't stop him from doing these things, and I don't think it'd be healthy to do so. Well, duh! This is a private school, and this moron suspends a 6-year-old child because the child is playing Teenage Mutant Turtles with an imaginary bow and arrow. Yep. Beam me up, Scotty.
What is the matter with this guy?
I expect stuff like that in the public school. What the heck?
Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. That's story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show.
Hey, this is Shane Van Hart with Brian Myers, Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.
Goodbye.
Des Moines, have you heard? Everything you need for personal protection and self-defense is now here. Crossroads Shooting Sports. Whether it's the next piece of gear, training, or a day at the range, it's all available at Iowa's premier indoor shooting range. The indoor climate control range features 17 lanes up to 25 yards in distance. The pro shop has gear for men and women and training classes for basic and advanced skill levels. Go to crossroadsshooting.com for self-defense and personal protection for your home and family. That's crossroadsshooting.com.